Let's have a little parlor game, huh?
Hello, and welcome to the Film and Water Podcast, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and this week, as we get closer to Halloween, we're talking about another sort of scary movie. It's Mario Bava's Five Dolls for an August Moon. What that means exactly, we'll try and figure out later on in the show. But joining me to talk about this very unusual movie is a contributing writer for the Talk Film Society, Sarah Jane. Hello, Sarah. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming. I'm a big fan of your writing. You write a lot of great stuff, reviews and other sort of assorted features for Talk Film Society. And I really, and you are great on Twitter, I have to say. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on.
Thank you. I try.
And there will be another big reason why I particularly asked you to do this movie. For any of you listening to this who have not heard of this movie, and that is probably most of you at this point, because I never heard of this movie up until recently, the plot is basically a gloss on 10 Little Indians from Agatha Christie. Under the guise of a relaxing island getaway, a group of people get together. And one of them is a chemist who has created a revolutionary new chemical process, and several of the other attending industrialists are eager to buy it from him. Business problems become moot when someone begins killing off the attendees one by one. This, as I mentioned, this movie is directed by Mario Bava. Before this film, I was really only familiar with Bava's sort of big films. Danger Diabolik, and Planet of Vampires, and Bay of Blood. This is kind of his most obscure one that I've seen to this point. Now, how familiar are you with this movie, Sarah?
I've probably seen it about 5 times.
Wow.
I've watched it twice, just in preparation for this podcast.
Okay.
So.
What do you think of it overall?
It's not my favorite Bava. I like it, but it's a little bit messy. It's hard to describe. I mean, you've watched it. It could be a little bit confusing. I just kind of let it wash over me and enjoy the costumes and the music, the sets. Visually, it looks nice, and the music is great. But I don't know. It's one of his lesser movies for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very beautiful looking movie, and among the cast members, and the main reason again, I asked Sarah Jane on to come on is one of the cast members is Edwidge Fenech. Am I saying that right again? How do you say it?
I'm not an expert either on her name, but I just call her Edwidge Fenech.
Fenech, okay. Unbelievably statuesque and magnetic personality. And the whole reason she sort of caught my eye is because all of your Twitter avatars are her in one way or the other.
Yeah.
And I was not familiar with her at all until I came across you on Twitter. And then I saw her picture on YouTube, and I saw that this movie is available to watch, you know, in its entirety on YouTube. And I thought, oh, well, let me get a chance to sort of get an idea of what she's all about. And she is, I think the phrase is like, pulls focus. I mean,
yes.
You cannot help but look at her. I mean, part of it is she's simply gorgeous. I mean, she looks like a sort of Wonder Woman, has this sort of amazing physique, but she's also just really captivating. I mean, you can't help it. I mean, even in this movie, which features a bunch of other very beautiful women, and some of the guys are sort of, you know, kind of nice specimens, and everybody's in beachwear running around in trunks. You can't take your eyes off her.
Yeah, she's my goddess. She's stunning. I mean, you know, whatever she's in. And she's actually, although you couldn't tell in this movie, because I don't know what copy you watched, but the one I was watching was dubbed.
So yeah, that's the one I saw too, yeah.
So you can't really tell how well she acts, but she's also a good actress, so.
Right, yeah, the dubbing here does not do her a whole lot of favors. But, I mean, so I watched this movie and I said I went into it just knowing that it was a basic version of 10 Little Indians. But it's, for a thriller, it's remarkably relaxed. You just mentioned like having it wash over you, and I mean the whole first like 10 minutes of this movie is just basically like a dance party of
yes.
Fenech dancing and grooving, and she's got these great hip hugger pants. And I mean for a movie that's supposed to kind of be a thriller, you don't get the sense that Bava was really that interested in the thriller part of the story.
Right? Yeah, that her dancing with that really huge hair. There's a couple of GIFs that I like to use that, you know, where she's just they just captured her just doing her little dance. Yeah, it's great. I would like to go to that party, actually.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, her hair is like the B-52s. It's like a full foot on top of her head as she's dancing. And, you know, it, I don't know, like the movie sort of presents this sort of fabulous kind of European lifestyle that I think of a lot of Americans imagine what goes on. Nobody really has to work. They all just kind of sit around and lounge and drink and party all day.
Yes. Well, yeah, they're all rich in some way.
Yeah, so, I mean, eventually people start getting bumped off, and after the first person is killed, they decide to, because they can't get off the island, because they've sent the boats away. The guy that owns the island has sent the boats away, so they're trapped in this island. So after the first person gets killed, they just decide to hang them in the meat locker, and yeah. With a kind of, like, shruggy, like, well, what are you going to do?
And they were more upset over the first person that got killed, who was really no relation to anyone. Right. But they were really upset about that. And then as the rest of them die, it was like, but why did they have to hang them in the locker? Why couldn't they just put them on the floor?
Yeah.
I didn't understand. They were all trussed up. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
That seems like an added thing that they didn't really need to do.
There's this great music sting every time somebody's killed, sort of like this organ music, this organ vamp, and it's completely atonal from what you would expect for it to be a thriller. And yet again, there is this kind of like, all right, what are you going to do? And I mean, there isn't anybody in particular, I'd say maybe except for Fennec, who you kind of really care about. I mean, she has this great line where she's talking to her husband and she's getting a shower and he says something to her about, why are you showering now? And she says, well, you called me a dirty whore. At least I can be a clean whore. And he's just kind of like, wow, okay. That's what's going on with these people here.
Yeah, they were just, I don't know. The movie is groovy, I'll call it. You know, it's very of its period, at least in Europe anyway.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I guess from the little bit I heard of the backstory, there's a deluxe Blu-ray of this by Arrow Video, which I have not gotten yet. I hear it's got a pretty good commentary track, but it's apparently that Bava, he was just coming off Danger Diabolic, which I have seen. I think is terrific fun, and apparently he wasn't terribly interested in this movie. I guess I don't know why he did it then. I mean, I guess, you know, he just felt like he wanted to work, but when he got the script, he had to show up a couple of days later to start shooting, and he just didn't. Some of the writing I've seen about this movie seem to suggest that because he didn't care about the story, that's why he jettisons any of the sort of traditional thriller beats that you would expect in a movie like this. And he really does make it kind of this long form party. I mean, as I'm sitting here talking, I'm watching Fennec dance in her bikini top and her pan, and, you know, and the guy that she's dancing with his ascot, you know, I mean, it's like, this is just not the way you would open a typical thriller movie.
No, the guy that she's dancing with, Stark, I don't know what the actor's name is. I didn't write it down. But to me, he was like a Bond villain to me. It was really, he's just, I don't know. The whole movie is just weird, and I can't even describe it. When you were doing the plot, oh, yeah, that's right. That's basically what it is. Because if you would ask me, I don't know, rich people, island, industrialists, resin, people die.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, it has this, again, it does have this kind of, you know, ghoulish sort of sense of humor, because in the beginning of the movie, the lights go out, and then when we see Fennec again, she's covered in blood, like her chest is covered in blood, and everyone thinks she's, you know, you're like, oh God, they've killed her off already. And then someone comes and sprays water on her, and it shoots off, and she wakes, and she starts moving around and giggling, so the whole thing's a gag. And you're like, oh, okay, right. These people have kind of like bizarre senses of humor, too.
Yeah, it's, like I said, it's not my favorite Bava, but it's, you know, you get to see Edwig, so that's why I watch it. I'm just sad that, I don't want to be spoilers, but...
Oh, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, yeah.
She's just not in it for the whole thing, basically. So once she goes, it's like, I don't really care anymore kind of a thing.
Yeah, that is...
I mean, I want to see what ends.
Yeah, I mean, she looks... I love the scene in her in the boat, where she's the guy... First of all, the guy's piloting a boat with his foot, which is just, again, this kind of incredibly lackadaisical, like, oh, it's all right, everything's, you know... I've got this massive powerboat, and I'm so careless, I'm piling with my boat. But she's in this kind of white frilly bikini, And she just looks fabulous. I mean, she just looks absolutely amazing. But you're right. I mean, about halfway through the movie, again, spoiler alert, I mean, she is bumped off. She's one of the ones who gets killed. And, yeah, after she leaves the movie, you're kind of like, well, all right, who am I left here to really care about? Which there isn't really too many people at that point that you're that interested in.
No, and none of them are sympathetic. I mean, I guess she is in a way, but – and the teen girl. But everybody else is just like, you know, I don't care if you die because, you know – you don't care, so.
Right, yeah, there's Isabel, the young girl who's spying on them all from the outside. We see her in the beginning, and of course she's got a lot more to do with this plot than we might expect. But, I mean, yeah, it's funny, I've watched this movie now two or three times, and again, for a movie that not a whole lot, there's not a lot of stakes. I mean, people get killed, but like you just said, you're not really, you know, you don't really care about them. Bava clearly doesn't care about them, so why should we care about them? It does have a kind of weirdly hypnotic spell to it. There's a great scene where these all these little crystal like balls come tumbling down the stairs, and like we follow them as they wrap around the stairs. Like, it's visually, it's beautiful to look at. I mean, even in the crappy version I watched on YouTube.
Right. And there are some Bava touches in there. It's not like he just didn't care totally and just put the camera down and said, act. I mean, there are some little touches that he does and some camera movements. Some of them are like, you know, what the hell? But still, they're interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it does. You are kind of disoriented through the whole thing. I think maybe because of the version I saw that was dubs, that it does have that kind of discordant. I mean, the woman who's talking for Fennec clearly isn't her, because she sounds sort of chipper and weird. You know, she doesn't sound, the voice doesn't match the, you know, where it's coming from necessarily. But yeah, the whole thing, and the right. Cuts are very abrupt. I mean, we go right from her being sprayed with the blood and laughing to her being on the boat, as we just talked about. So I mean, it's edited in a kind of strange way. How familiar are you with Bava's other films? I mean, I've seen a lot of them, but I can't speak enough about it to say that it is starkly different in his style from his other movies.
I mean, I've seen all of his big ones going back to Black Sunday. And, I mean, the black and white ones, although visually stunning, they are quite different from this one. And even his modern ones, I mean, Danger Diabolic is more, I mean, that one is fantastical. So it does have some of the elements that this one does a little bit. But I don't know, to me, and I could be wrong, I'm not a Bava expert, but it just seems like you said, that he didn't really care. And he wasn't putting that much of himself into it.
Again, it's very, I find it compelling to watch. I'm sitting here watching it over as we're talking. And again, it's like beautiful to look at. I mean, the scenery is really beautiful. I mean, part of it is because it's the 70s and everybody's got these 70s fashions. So everything is really groovy looking, as you mentioned. But I mean, there's something about Bava's skill as a filmmaker that even when he's kind of on a half effort, which is what this one feels like, it's still really very interesting to watch.
Yeah, I'm with you.
When did you first discover Fennec? When did the fandom start?
I wasn't familiar with her until I met he's now my husband, but back then he was. We were just going through a bunch of Italian movies. Probably was All the Colors of the Dark that he showed me. And I turned to him when she was on screen and I said, that is the most gorgeous woman I have ever seen. And she has the best breasts of any woman I have ever seen. I mean, she's perfect in every way. And so that was it. That was that first viewing of her. That was it. She was mine. So then when I got on Twitter, I was just, what picture should I use? And then I thought, oh, I'll use her. And so a lot of people who don't know who she is will think that that's me for a second. And
yeah,
like,
right.
Oh, wait a minute. If you're following me because you think I look like that, then you may as well just go away because that is not me. A lot of people do know who she is, and then they appreciate her. And then, you know, on Fridays, I like to post, you know, a thread of pictures of her. So, you know, a lot of men and some women are appreciative of that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for most people that are listening to this, probably not familiar with her at all. But here are just some of the films that is on her filmography. These titles are Play the Game or Leave the Bed. Have you ever seen that one?
No, is that one of her early ones?
1969.
She did a lot of sex comedies, which those aren't my favorite. I prefer her in the giallos than I do her sex comedies. So okay. Some of those I have.
There's Your Vice is a Locked Room and Only I Have the Key. Great title.
Yes, that's a good one.
That's a good one. Okay, good. Good to know. I want to watch some of these after I'm done with this, because I am really interested. The inconsolable widow thanks all those who consoled her.
That one I don't think I've seen.
Okay.
That title, I don't recognize that one.
Strip nude for your killer.
Yes.
Okay.
That's one of the last of her Giallo movies.
Okay.
Because then she goes back into sex comedies again.
Right, right. Yeah. Erotic exploits of a sexy seducer. The school teacher goes to boys' high. A policewoman on the porno squad. That's.
I've seen that one, and I've seen the school teacher one. And again, it's her, so it's great. But they're just, you know, Italian sex comedies in general are not my favorite. So, you know, I only watch them if she's in it, or if my husband happens to be watching it. I'm like, oh, all right, I'll watch it. But I wouldn't seek them out myself.
Is there a particular thriller that you would recommend of hers that you say is the best one to, if you really want to get like a good sample of what she could offer people?
There's probably four or five that I would say. The Strange Vice of Mrs. Warda, The Case of the Bloody Iris, and All the Colors of the Dark. Oh, okay. And Your Vice is a Locked Room and Only I Have the Key.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because as I said, the reason I hunted this one down is, again, because it was Bava and because she was in it. And then I said, when she gets killed off with a knife to her chest halfway through, I was like, oh, okay. All right. You know? I mean, there's got William Berger as the industrialist, and, you know, it's like, all right, he's fine, and all the other girls that are going back and forth, and two of the women are having an affair, so they're double-crossing each other, which is kind of a nice twist. There's this great scene on a beach where one of the male cast members is trying to romance the female one, and she could not be less interested, which is fantastic. He's, like, stroking her chin and trying to, and she's just staring blankly out into space, which is fantastic.
She was so polite when she removed his hand. She just, you know, she was like slow motion. She grabbed it. She moved it back towards him. And then it was like a little pat. And then she just got up and walked away. Didn't say anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
She could not be less interested.
There seems to be, like, I don't know if I phrase this correctly. There seems to be, even though in these movies, I mean, clearly, like, Fennec is meant to be, you know, sort of a sex object because she's always in these sort of amazing outfits. There seems to be a kind of, like proto-feminism in these movies. Am I crazy? Where it's, like, the women here are not at all really victims of the men's behavior. You know what I mean? Like, they're just a sort of, I don't know, they seem to be just as much in control as to what's going on as the men are. I would think if this was made in America in the 2000s, it would be a very different kind of movie.
Yeah, I think, and in a lot of her movies especially, she usually does go through a lot of some sort of punishment, you know, either mental or physical. But in the end, you know, she's able to fight back and, you know, survive kind of a thing. This one, she didn't. But at first, though, you would think that they're all there for sex objects, like you said. But, yeah, sorry. I lost my train of thought there.
Well, there's no nudity in this movie at all. I mean, at all. And so, again, that's sort of surprising because you feel like that's where it could be going, but that really isn't it. I mean, it's, again, everybody has these fabulous costumes, and the one guy's again got the little neckerchiefs around all the time. But yeah, I mean, it's. I mean, there is a lot of sex going on. There are trading beds back and forth, but you don't see any of it. It's like a remarkable. From what I, you know, Mario Bava, you know, his earlier films weren't hard R or anything else, but it feels like a very chaste movie considering all the sort of lurid stuff that goes on in here.
Well, and usually in Edward Vitek movies, you know, she does get naked a lot. And if you follow my Twitter feed on Fridays when I post pictures of her,
yeah.
I mean, she is nude a lot in her movies. So I don't know if Bava, maybe he just wasn't interested in that. I don't know.
Now, if anyone has seen Inglourious Bastards, the character that Mike Myers plays is named Ed Finnick. And
yes.
You have to assume that is a, you know, tribute from Quentin Tarantino because he's a big fan of hers, right?
Yes, absolutely. That is, there's a lot of the names in that movie are tributes to Italian actors or directors.
Right. The one guy was Ugo Tognazzi, the main Nazi guy that they hire, and the Nazi who kills other Nazis. He's named after
Hugo. Yeah, there's a Hugo Stieglitz.
Hugo Stieglitz. That's what I was thinking. Yeah. Hugo Stieglitz. Yeah.
And they're, I can't think of the other one, but when they go to the theater where they're trying, when they're going to try to assassinate or set the bombs, those two guys also have Italian actor names, but I can't remember what they are.
Oh, right, when they fake, fake being Italians, that's right, yeah. So I'm kind of winding back to $5 for an August Moon, when the movie wraps up, when we're kind of down to just the last couple of suspects, and we're off the island, there's this scene in the jail where we see Isabel, and the costume that Isabel is wearing is one of the most fabulous things I've ever seen. It looks like something out of, like, Logan's Run. She looks absolutely just brilliant.
I would, if I had her body, I would wear that, yes, because she's got the knee-high boots, or actually they're over the knee, and then she's wearing, like, the shortest shorts, and then she has that brown cape.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's fantastic.
And the collar up is over her neck, so when she walks into the jail, I mean, she looks fantastic. And she said she, in the, when all the scenes with her on the island, she's kind of timid and demure. Yes. And then when we see her here, because we find out, you know, spoiler, that she's kind of she's the mastermind behind this whole thing. She's all of a sudden looking totally in command. Like, she's almost like, it's like a Barbarella or something.
Well, she had that green, so she wanted to spend it.
Yeah. 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 We find out that again, that the person that she was in on it, but she's then double crossing him. And he learns that a little too late at the end of the film, as she wanders off and leaves him behind. And again, it's a great little twist ending. I said this is a strange movie in that, like I said, it's very languid. The twist ending is nice, but it feel like Bob is kind of like, oh yeah, we'll throw in this twist ending here at the end. But I can't at the same time, like, I watched it twice in the space of a week, and for a movie where, again, it's just not a whole lot of stuff seems to matter, I did find it strangely compelling. And again, I have to assume that that's mostly from Bava.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I would recommend it for people if you've never seen it. If they've never heard of Bava, or if they haven't seen any of his movies, it might be a shock to watch something like this. It's hard to prepare someone for it. You just have to go into it and feel it, live it, let it wash over you, like I said. Try not to... If you try to figure out who's doing what, you can't. So you may as well just watch it and not try to figure anything out. Just let it go over you.
That's funny you say that, because many years ago, well, there's some friends of mine have a company where they screen old movies in a theater. They get prints and they run them. And they were the first guys that introduced me to Italian horror, because I had never mm-hmm. seen it before that. And the first couple of Italian horror films that I saw, I was completely flummoxed, because it didn't explain nothing. None of these movies explained anything. You know, it was like zombies just started attacking. And I was like, but why are they, I found myself very frustrated. And then after the fourth or fifth movie, I realized, oh, I see, Italian horror is not about the whys. It just is. It's just, demons, a bunch of zombies attack people in a movie theater. That's it.
I love that movie.
That's your movie. That's it. It doesn't matter why it's happening. It's just happening, and that's what I'm showing you. And once I learned to appreciate that form of storytelling, I loved it. I really became a fan of it. But I have to admit, it took me a while. And this film is that too. I think if you're going to watch it thinking that this is going to be Murder on the Orient Express, you're going to come away very disappointed.
No. Yeah, it is not. It couldn't be farther from that movie.
When did you start getting into, like, learning about Italian horror? Because, I mean, it's something you have to kind of seek out.
Way, way, way back when IFC was actually a really good channel and didn't have commercials, and, you know, they would just show actual movies. They showed Deep Red, and I happened to watch it, not knowing who Argento was or anything. And this had to be early 90s, I guess, or maybe mid-90s. And so I was just like, wow, that it became my favorite movie instantly, and it still is in my top three of all time. And so I watched a little bit more of his movies, but it wasn't until I met my husband again who introduced me to a lot more stuff. So I have to thank him for, making me into the person I am today.
Well,
for a while, I was a when I was younger, I was a film snob. I would never watch a lot of the stuff that I watch now. I would just be like, why would I watch a bad movie? You know, I have better things to do. But, now I'll watch anything. And most of the movies I watch are pretty bad, with some good ones thrown in. But, you know, my husband and I think if we don't watch them, no one will. So,
now, what do you consider, like, pretty bad? Like, what are you thinking of when you're saying something is pretty bad? Just, like, sort of genre, disreputable genre stuff?
Yeah. We don't watch a lot of mainstream stuff at all. The other night we tried to watch, I guess it was last night. It was just so awful. It was called Dream House from, I think, 2013 or 2011. It was like Daniel Craig, Naomi Watts, and Rachel Weisz.
Oh, right. Okay.
It was so awful. I mean, it was just, it was really bad. And so I don't expect that from modern movies that much. I think, oh, they should be all right. But no, man, that thing was terrible. So, and that's worse than a lot of the genre movies that we watch. So, because a lot of people will say something like, Manos, Hands of Fate is the worst movie I've ever seen. And that's just so not true. They just must not have seen a lot of movies. Because to me, if I know what the director is trying to say, and he's getting his point across to me, I don't care if it was shot in El Paso for, like, no money. You know, if I can understand it and I get his message, then it's fine and I like it. So, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting because I've had this discussion with friends of mine about stuff about, like, everyone says, you know, Ed Wood. You know, Ed Wood's the worst director. And to me, it's like, he's not. He's not because his movies are memorable, you know. They're distinctive. They're never boring. They're cheap jack, but they're not at all, you know, when I watch an Ed Wood movie, I don't find my attention flagging. And then, you know, compared to somebody like a Coleman Francis, whose movies are just these endless scenes of vistas with voiceover dropped in later because he didn't want to record sound. I'm like, this guy's way worse than Ed Wood. These movies are way worse. So, and I've seen, I mean, I've only, have you, we're getting off topic a little, but who cares? Have you ever, I know you don't really see movies in theaters anymore, and you've written about that here and there. Have you ever walked out of a movie in a theater? I've only done it a couple of times.
I haven't. I try to be, I have like the completist mentality.
Right.
Where I won't let a movie, I don't want to let a movie beat me. No, my husband and I went to the AFI, because we used to live in Los Angeles, and so we went to the AFI Film Festival, and Asia Argento had her, The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things. It was like a premiere, and so there was going to be a Q&A afterwards, and so we're watching this movie, and I don't hate a lot of movies. I mean, I made a list on Letterboxd, and I think there's only 8 movies on it, so I don't hate a lot of movies, but that one I hated so much. And so afterwards, Asia, in a wig, pretending to be someone else, was sitting on the stage with, I'm not sure who, I can't even remember who it was, but she was trying to pretend that she wasn't her. But the audience was just, they were all with me. I don't even know why I brought that up now.
Well, I guess what I was getting at is I've walked out of
like you had asked if I'd walked out of
the movie. Yeah.
I would walk out on one, it would have been that one. But I had to see what she had to say, and could she defend herself at the end of that movie?
Okay.
And she did not.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, when I think about I think I've walked out of 3 movies in my lifetime, and they were all kind of big budget, boring. Like, I went to see Beverly Hills Cop 3 in a theater, and I remembered thinking, this movie is so lazy and so on autopilot. Why am I wasting my time watching this? I had that completist mentality. I'm like, look, I paid to be here. I should at least sit through this. But that was one of the movies where I was like, this is never going to get any better. And I think about all the money that was put towards that, you know, like the tens of millions of dollars, all the crew put together, and how boring that movie was. And then again, I'm watching something like $5 for an August Moon, which was probably done very cheaply and not, you know, shot very quickly. And yet, you know, it's never boring. It's, you know, I mean, it's got this sort of weird, you know, again, I keep using the phrase spell, but it does have this weird spell to it. I do want to ask, though, what the hell does that title mean?
Oh, I have no idea. Yeah. I think most of the movies, especially if you're looking at, like, the giallos or even Edward Finnick movies, you know, your vice is a locked room and I have the key. I don't know what that means. You know, at least in the case of the Bloody Iris, that has something to do with the plot.
Right, right.
But, yeah.
I think that's part of the attraction, is just like, you know, when I found it on YouTube and I'm like, $5 for an August Moon. I mean, I guess they'll explain it to me at some point. And then the movie ends and I'm like, oh, no. All right. Okay. I guess I'm not going to know. All right, fine, you know. Yeah. I mean, the final line of the movie, you've got Isabel getting into a limo, and the guy says, where do you want to go? And she says, take me to Switzerland. And they just drive her out of the movie. Like, yeah. That's the end of the film. It's a really fun movie. Again, it's on YouTube, not in the greatest version in the world, but you can watch the whole thing on YouTube. As I mentioned, there's a big deluxe Blu-ray of it out from Arrow, and those guys do amazing stuff, really, these deluxe packages on this thing. Before we wrap up here, I mean, I'd give you a chance to talk about the stuff that you write about for Talk Film Society, because I really like your writing. I really like what you write and how you write. Like, how did you find your way to writing for them?
I had been writing on Letterboxd since about 2014, I think. And some people that I follow on Twitter, Matt and Marcelo, I think it was Matt, posted, they're the editors of the Talk Film, because at first it was a podcast and then they decided to turn it into a website. They were putting a call out for writers and they said, if you have some stuff, submit. And so laughingly, I said, I haven't written anything, but here's my Letterboxd account. And then a couple of days later, they said, hey, we want you to write. I was like, what? You know, I was shocked because I didn't, you know, I wasn't being serious. And so I was surprised they took me seriously. And they said, right from the beginning, that they wanted me to write a column about movies that people don't, that I think should be watched, that were kind of ignored or forgotten. And so they came up with the title Overlooked and Underseen, and basically there are no rules. It's just whatever I want to write about. So that's how it started. And then they know that I love kaiju, so I think I can't remember if I asked or they asked me, but I think I said, can I write a column on kaiju movies? And they said, sure, we'll make it bi-weekly and just go. So that's it.
Fantastic. Yeah, I love writing about movies when I get a chance to do it. Obviously, I love talking about them. That's why I do this show, for Pete's sakes. But but yeah, no, I'm a big fan of your work, Sarah. I think it's terrific. And, you know, so I'm very happy to have you on the show to talk about this strange little curio. And I have to thank you for introducing me to the delight, which is Fennec. So I will never forget her now that I've seen her.
Hey, I am happy to spread the word about her because she's everything. She's awesome.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know, you might, because you might have seen it, but she's actually in Hostel 2.
I've heard Eli that, Roth, yes.
Yeah, she's the art teacher at the beginning of that movie.
Okay, I tend to stay away from Eli Roth movies, but yeah, I'm, you know, I was happy to see that she's still around. She still looks fabulous.
She does.
She's still working.
Yep. She does a lot of producing, and I think for a while there she was on Italian TV a lot. So I'm happy she's still around.
I wonder if she ever knows that she has such a huge fan in America as you.
Oh, I'm sure she has huge fans all over the world.
Wow,
not just me.
I think you're at the top of the heap there. So, again, thank you so much for coming on to talk about this movie. I didn't have a whole lot to say about it because, again, it really is kind of a mood piece in a lot of ways, and so it's just the kind of thing you have to just sort of watch it. But I really kind of use this as an excuse just to talk to you, and so I'm glad that I had a chance to. And so thank you for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate you.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll have a link to Sarah Jane's column on Talk Film Society in the show notes. Of course, you can find all the back episodes of this show over on the website, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com. And we're always talking movies and stuff on Twitter, which is @filmandwaterpod. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Check out $5 for an August Moon, if that's your type of thing, over on YouTube. And until next week, that's a wrap. Oh, my God.
come up to the house. It's no good staying out here. Until the police get here.
That's right.
Well, if we don't do something about him, the crabs will take care of it for us. The police will have a nice white skeleton to look at.
Oh, God.
You killed him, didn't you?
I can't figure out whether you're dangerous or just stupid. You forget, I like men, but I like them to be alive.